because there is only one thing that can be done.
I know, Father Maggio replied.
Grazie, Della Torre said. Molto grazie. November. In the quiet minutes before midnight, a woman who had just returned from a performance of Tosca at the Kennedy Center was walking her Labrador retriever, Coffee. Coffee and his owner stopped when the dog paused to sniff intently at the base of a mailbox post. Suddenly, his muzzle rose and a low growl rolled from his throat. There was a flash of light, followed by a crash of glass as a man exploded through the picture window of the house across the street. The man was on fire. The woman released the dog and ran to the man, tearing off her jacket to flail at the flames. His head was on fire, his eyebrows were gone, and he was screaming. Dropping to her knees, she pressed the jacket to his face and rubbed the flames from his hair. Seconds later, the house exploded into fire. Getting to her feet, she ran to the house next door and banged on the door. A startled man in boxer shorts answered her pounding. She screamed, "Call 911! By the time the woman returned with blankets, a couple of her neighbors had carried the burned man awkwardly down the driveway. The man was groaning as they set him down on the sidewalk. It was only when the woman looked up the driveway and saw the red and yellow little tight car parked on the walkway next to the garage that she thought of the people inside, the woman and the darling little boy who drove that plastic car up and down the driveway on weekends.
"Oh, my God,"
she said, and started running toward the inferno. She was nearly to the front steps when someone grabbed her from behind and pulled her back. By the time the burned man was on the operating table at Fair Oaks Hospital, the blaze on Keswick Lane had been brought under control, and two Fairfax County firefighters were getting ready to go inside in search of victims. The neighbors had already volunteered that two people lived in the house, the woman who owned it and her three-year-old son. There was no husband. She was a single mother, and her Volvo was in the garage. Outside, a cherry picker with two young firemen in its basket was maneuvered into position against an upstairs window, and the windows smashed. The younger of the firemen leaned in through the window and tested the floor with a crowbar. When the floor showed no signs of giving way, he climbed inside, leaving his partner in the cherry picker ready to assist. The firemen found an adult and a small child. They were still in their beds, or what was left of their beds, the mattresses reduced to box springs and bits of disintegrated cloth. It was the deputy chief's job to inform the next of kin. The deputy chief learned that the home belonged to a Kathleen Ann Lassiter, who lived there with her young son. According to insurance records, the next of kin was a brother, Joseph, who resided in McLean, and who, at that moment, was dreaming. But somewhere, a telephone had begun to ring, and it pissed him off. He answered it.
"What?"
The man's voice was professionally calm, reasonable and official, but what he was saying was far from reasonable, and it didn't really sink in until 10 minutes later, when Lassiter was in his car driving through the night toward Fairfax. There had been a fire. Positive identification had not been made, but the bodies... No, Joe thought. No. He'd set out for the morgue, but found himself taking the turns toward Kathy's house. When he got there, a uniformed policeman was playing out a roll of yellow tape from a stake at the corner of the driveway. The tape was imprinted over and over with the words, "Police line, do not cross." He turned and walked over to the policeman.
"What happened?"
The cop nodded toward the fire trucks.
"They're saying arson."
"What?"
"Hey, Joe, what are you doing here?"
The voice was mock accusatory, and hearing it, Lassiter turned. A ruddy face was smiling up at him.
"Jim Reardon," he said.
"I remember."
"So, what are you doing here?"
"It's my sister's house." The smile faded from Reardon's face.
"Jesus Christ, Joe, I'm sorry, I didn't know."
An hour later, Lassiter sat across from the detective in a cubicle at police headquarters. The last time he had seen them, their positions had been reversed. Reardon had been sitting across from him in Lassiter's own office, looking uncomfortable.
"I got a year to go," Reardon had said, leaning toward his desk. "And then I'm out, so I figure maybe I should start looking now. So that's why I'm here. That's why I'm talking to you.
It was a conversation Lassiter had once or twice a week. If it wasn't a cop, it was someone from the FBI or DEA, the Pentagon, or Langley. They all wanted a job in investigation, and with their skills, Lassiter Associates was the logical place to go. Reardon moved some papers around, found one in particular, and pushed it across the desk toward Joe.
No question it was arson, he said. Multiple points of origin, obvious accelerant residues. Whoever said it didn't care who knew it.
Reardon paused. I better take you down to the morgue. Drop you off so you can ID them. 10 minutes later, they pulled up in front of the county building. His sister's blonde hair was now a crusty black skullcap. Her lips were parted. Her blue eyes stared up at the fluorescent light. Brandon was even worse, his skin charred and blistered. He signed something without reading it and went straight to the medical examiner's office. Tom Truong looked up from his desk, then got to his feet.
Cho!
He said, extending a delicate hand that came with a faint whiff of formaldehyde.
What am I doing for you? You're working a case?
His connection with the medical examiner was an odd one. They'd played soccer together on a 30-and-over team until a couple of years back when Lassiter had blown out his knee. Lassiter occasionally hired Truong as a forensics consultant and expert witness. Despite his wobbly English, he was a brilliant witness. Juries loved him.
It's not a case, he told Truong. It's my sister.
He raised his chin.
She's back there, he said, with my nephew. The arson case.
Lassiter, Truong whispered to himself.
Oh, Joe, very sorry, so very sorry.
Had he done the autopsy yet?
Truong nodded solemnly.
The fire didn't kill him. No smoke particle in lung, no carbon monoxide in blood. These tell us victim die before fire.
Truong paused.
What about Guy, husband?
What guy?
I'm hearing, Truong said. Third person in your sister's house. He coming out window on fire?
He shrugged.
Where is this guy?
Burn Ward?
Truong shrugged again.
Maybe Fair Oak, maybe Fairfax?
An hour later, when Lassiter caught up with Reardon, the detective was sitting at a borrowed desk in a doctor's office at Fair Oaks Hospital.
You didn't tell me you had a suspect.